Pigeons seem to be everywhere in New York City, and they fill city squares in London and Venice and, in fact, cities all over the world. On today's Please Explain, we're finding out all about these ubiquitous birds, from why they thrive in urban areas to how they're able to find their way home from hundreds of miles away. We're joined by Andrew Bleckman, managing editor of Orion magazine and author of Pigeons, the fascinating saga of the world's most revered and reviled bird. It's published by Grove Press, and by science writer Courtney Humphreys, author of Superdove, How the Pigeon Took Manhattan and the World. It's published by Smithsonian. Hello, welcome to our show.
Very nice to be here. Thank you, Leonard.
And thanks for having me.
We also invite our listeners to join the conversation. If you have a question, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692 or leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Let's begin with you, Andrew. Almost everyone who lives in New York or almost any city knows something about pigeons. Are all the pigeons we find here basically one species?
I guess you could say that all pigeons that you see in the city tend to be very similar. I mean, you will have other birds that come out that have been bred for different reasons by specialists, such as pigeon lovers, kind of people who breed dogs. But they tend to be all relatively similar and have similar traits as well.
Are they all, as Courtney's title suggests, actually doves?
Yeah, all pigeons are doves. Not all doves are pigeons.
So when people release white doves, are they releasing white pigeons?
Well, yeah, because otherwise they wouldn't really have anywhere to fly to, or they would just keep flying. It's a little less romantic, but it's a business. So when someone takes the birds to a wedding, they're basically taking them from their home where the birds live, and they go to the wedding, they release them, and when they drive home, the birds are there already.
Are there a variety of pigeon breeds? Are homing pigeons, are all pigeons homing pigeons?
Oh, no. Homers are actually particularly bred to home, especially well. I mean, they're all sorts. I mean, some pigeons get lost. Some pigeons are extremely good at just endurance. Mike Tyson's pigeons, for example, are called flights and tipplers, and they basically just fly in circles above him, sometimes for 16 hours at a time without stopping. So they're all, it's just like with dog breeds, in a sense.
Well, when I was growing up, I used to see a lot of rooftop pigeon coops where people would let them out and they would circle around for a while and then seem to, on cue, come back because they're trained.
They're bred for that. Just as homers are. I mean, a lot of these birds at the end of the day are thoroughbreds. I mean, that's how I got into the whole thing. I met someone at a bodega while I was ordering a tuna sandwich, and he started telling me about his thoroughbreds. And I was like, thoroughbreds in Manhattan? He's like, no, actually, Brooklyn, but they're pigeons. So these are highly, highly bred birds that really are at the top of their sport.
Courtney,
much like kind of Kentucky Derby.
Courtney, why did they do so well in cities?
There's a few reasons. One is because they're just an accident of their natural habitat. Pigeons were actually originally cliff dwellers. So a lot of them lived on, say, rocky coastal cliffs along the seashore, and so when they get to cities, basically they like to live on buildings, which are more like cliffs. They don't like to go out into forests and live in trees like some birds do. So the more that we urbanize, the more habitat they have.
So they don't live in our parks?
Well, they spend time in the parks, but then at night they go usually to buildings where they have nests. So that's one thing, is we provide good habitat for them. The other answer is that we actually kind of helped make them what they are, because pigeons were domesticated thousands of years ago, and so by people. And so they've kind of been around people for thousands of years, but they don't have the same kind of fear mechanisms that some birds have. So they're really good at being urban birds because of that.
And where are they originally from?
Well, I mean, I don't know if we know exactly, but I think the Middle East and Africa is kind of where the first traces of pigeons were found, but they were carried all over the world by people. So they were not native in the U.S. They were actually brought here on ships as food.
And they don't migrate?
No, they don't migrate the way some birds do from place to place. They like to kind of stick in one place, so they're very settled birds.
Are the pigeons in London or Moscow or Rome interchangeable with the pigeons of New York?
I would say
well,
so.
Well, they are the same species, but obviously, like any bird, you know, they might have different, you know, they might have developed different characteristics, but they were all kind of, they're all considered the same species, and different ones, you know, as Andrew mentioned, there's all these people who breed pigeons also, so you might get a lot of these homing pigeons who kind of get out and get into the wild pigeons living in cities, and so there's a lot of, you know, influence of domestication that we see in pigeons.
Andrew, do they make good pets? Are they able to recognize people?
They're extraordinarily bright. They're almost like flying dolphins. And this is coming from someone who, you know, I didn't grow up, you know, as a pigeon admirer. I kind of tripped across it as a journalist. But yeah, they make great pets. They're extremely bright. They're loyal, and I mean, and they like us. I mean, they're one of the few, you know, animals out there that really want to be with us, sort of like dogs and cats. Wherever you find a person, you're gonna likely find a pigeon.
I've been reading recently that birds in general can be a lot smarter than we've assumed, that something like a bird brain isn't necessarily an insult. Pigeons particularly smart, crows, other breeds as well?
Well, I think that's kind of a special thing. I think we have just kind of a, you might term it a special centricity or a special arrogance that, I mean, I think the more you look into it, the more we're realizing just how smart a lot of animals are. It's a lot easier to dehumanize an animal than it is to learn to respect it.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I think, you know, pigeons aren't considered particularly smart as birds. I mean, a lot of people study, you know, as you said, crows, because they show all these sort of playing behaviors, and they're seen as very clever. And pigeons, you know, they do have tiny brains, and they're not considered particularly smart birds in a lot of ways, but at the same time, they can really do a lot. It's amazing. They do really well in visual and memory tests, and I think it's just a sign of how much we underestimate the brains of animals in general.
We're talking,
their instincts are amazing as well.
We're talking about pigeons on today's Please Explain. We got a call from Connie Weinberg from Westchester about baby pigeons. Hi, Connie.
Hi, Leonard. So glad you did this show. The minute I heard it, I said, I want to ask this question.
Go ahead.
How come you never see baby pigeons?
Oh, I got that one. it's because they don't leave
the nest all the time, too.
What?
They don't leave the nest until they look. Basically, a baby pigeon looks the same as an adult pigeon by the time it leaves the nest. Until it leaves the nest, it looks like a very odd and kind of charming creature, almost like an ugly duckling. But by the time it leaves the nest, it basically looks like an adult pigeon. And pigeons tend to be monogamous, and they really spend a lot of time with their offspring raising them.
So why don't, Connie said earlier, they tend to put their nests on buildings, but I've only seen one pigeon nest ever. Some friends went on vacation. When they came back, there was a pigeon who'd built a nest in her bedroom windowsill and seemed to be rather annoyed that these humans had come into her life when they returned from their vacation. But you don't see them very often, or am I just living in the wrong place?
Well, you also have to look for them. I mean, that's one thing. When I started working on my book, I had no idea what a pigeon nest looked like either, and I just started looking, and now I do see pigeon nests. But they're really tucked away. I mean, they like to nest on ledges, in under bridges, all kinds of nooks and crannies. And so most people don't go walking around the city kind of looking at those places. So, but when you do, you can see them. But you know, like Andrew was saying, like because the babies are in the nest, you wouldn't necessarily notice a baby pigeon. I would say though that around in springtime, just going back to what your caller had asked, if you're walking around in spring and early summer and you see this sort of fluffy-looking, scruffy pigeon that has kind of a lumpy gray beak and doesn't quite look, you know, like a adult pigeon, that's actually probably a recent fledgling. It's just you have to kind of know what to look for again.
They live in big groups? Do they live in flocks? Because that's the way we often see them.
They do, actually. They're very social creatures. They're very social with one another, and they're very social with us. I mean, if you're looking for a social creature, pigeons are them. But the one thing is, if the flock gets too big, then it gets stressed. But generally, a healthy flock is one that lives together, feeds together, sleeps in the same area, and that's what you tend to see.
Courtney, are there easy ways to tell the difference between male and female pigeons? They seem to look more or less the same to me.
Yeah, they really, it's not like some birds that have very different colorations between males and females. It's mostly, I mean, on average, the females are smaller than the males, but when you're going bird by bird, the main way to tell is just to watch them in spring, because you'll see the males are kind of puffing up their chest and they're driving the females around, and the females are just kind of, so it's more about behavior in terms of, something that can really tell you if it's male or female.
In fact, if you see a pigeon with its tail feathers kind of down, scraping against the pavement and spread, almost like a lobster tail, that's a male doing the mating dance.
Ah. Anne from the Upper East Side has baby pigeons living on her terrace, and she wants to know how to get them to leave.
Very hard to do. Very hard to do.
Once they have chosen a habitat, that's where they're going to stay until they finally leave. Will they then come back when they want to build their own nests?
Probably. I mean, I would suggest this, and this may be a difficult pill to swallow, but I would learn to possibly appreciate them. And just kind of learn to make friends with them. Either that or the other thing is to harm them, which I don't suggest. It's very hard to get them to leave. What you can do is you can put up something around that area so that they don't, grow in population. But it's hard to get them to leave.
Well, Anne, I'm sorry that you have to hear that. You want to add to that, Courtney?
No, I mean, I kind of agree. If you really want to go to the trouble, you can try to block off the surfaces. You could have them removed by pest control people. I mean,
what about those fake owls?
I've seen pigeons sitting next to those owls like they're buddies, so I don't know.
We're going to take a little break.
But you can certainly try. I mean, you can always try. It's just, like Andrew says, I'm sort of on the side of, learning to love your neighbors.
We'll take a little break, and when we come back, we'll take more listener calls, find out more about homing pigeons and other matters as we continue this conversation on Please Explain with Courtney Humphreys, who's the author of Superdove, How the Pigeon Took Manhattan and the World. It's published by the Smithsonian. Andrew Bleckman of Orion Magazine, his book, Pigeons, the Fascinating Saga of the World's Most Revered and Reviled Bird, which is published by Grove Press. Stay with us. This month's pick for the Leonard Lopate Show Book Club is Julia Child's memoir, My Life in France, which she co-wrote with her grandnephew, Paul Prudhomme. And this month, when you sign up for the book club's e-newsletter, you will be entered to win a copy of the book. Go to our show page and follow the links to our book club. And as Julia would say, bon appetit. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter. We are back with Please Explain, talking about pigeons today with Andrew Bleckman, managing editor of Orion Magazine. His book, Pigeons, the Fascinating Saga of the World's Most Revered and Reviled Bird, is published by Grove Press. And also with us is science writer Courtney Humphreys. She's written a book called Superdove, How the Pigeon Took Manhattan and the World. It's published by Smithsonian. And we're inviting your calls to 212-433-WNYC. That's area code 212-433-9692. Let's take a couple of calls and see where the audience wants us to go. Hi, Mindy.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my phone call. I adopted a street pigeon about 3 months ago from my workplace, and he was sick. He was on the floor, so it would be easy to grab him. While he was recovering, I pet him every day. At first, he freaked out when he saw me, but over time, he acted like a dog. He let me pet under his wings. I left him alone for overnight one time, and the next morning, you can tell he was deprived of social, contact. He just loved me, and he was so much more docile. After doing some research, I was wondering, why is this beautiful, amazing, affectionate animal that acts like dogs reviled? And it turns out that I read that there's a propaganda put out by the pesticide company. you know, that rats were wing, that they are rats with wings. And I was wondering, A, how do we, you know, how do we as pigeon lovers and appreciators fight this propaganda that was so effectively put out that they're, you know, reviled bad animals? A, and B, you know, what is your comment about feeding pigeons and controlling the population? Because there is a need to balance, you know, population, you know, and
just
I mean,
like we can fix cats and dogs, but but we don't fix pigeons. Where did they get that rats with wings reputation? Is that relatively new?
It's actually extremely new. All through human history, pigeons were not just adored, but revered. If you go back to prehistory, you know, the relationship began when some caveman put out his hand to a pigeon, and they became very friendly, and they would stay just like dogs around the campfire, probably around the area, I should say. And, you know, they were used all throughout history. Charlemagne had them, Caesar had them, Julius Reuter started his new service with them, Picasso loved them, Darwin loved them. Then they're still beloved in a lot of cultures around the world. It's really just an American or Anglo thing. It seems to be on both sides of the pond in England and the United States especially. They're still revered in a lot of places. You know, the interesting thing is, what do you do? And it's going to sound counterintuitive, but I think the best thing you can do is, it's not pigeons, it's the number of pigeons that people have problems with. And when you feed the pigeons, you increase the population. Just like if, you know, the human population's exploding all over the world because of access to cheap food for the most part. Same thing happens with pigeons. That actually stresses the populations out. So by not feeding the pigeons, or if you do like a teaspoon of actual seed or something like that, that's one of the best ways you can do to actually help improve their reputation, is to have slightly fewer of them.
Courtney, are they garbage scavengers like rats?
Well, yeah, I mean, they have learned to do, you know, to get by in the city. Their natural food is grain and seeds. And they've, you know, because they've been around people for, you know, as long as we've had agriculture, they like to, you know, they've always fed on agricultural fields and things like that. And in the city, you know, they've adapted. So they still have natural food sources, but they also, you know, have learned to eat human food and, you know, pick up a bagel here and there. And you know, so, but I don't think that they're not exactly scavenging in trash cans. I mean, they forage on the ground, you know.
Well, I've heard that. I've heard they only like everything bagels.
It's a grossly inaccurate. It's a shame because it's just grossly inaccurate moniker. I mean, there's nothing rat-like about them.
Well, do
I mean,
they carry disease like rats?
They don't carry any more disease than your house cat, for the most part. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple like things that people have pointed out that pigeons can transmit to people, but it's mostly through like their droppings. You know, like if for some reason you were exposed to a lot of pigeon droppings, it's. You know, the average, like, just touching a pigeon or, you know, the average contact anybody has with a pigeon isn't, you know, they're not, I mean, one thing that's, I think because they're gray birds, I actually think that people project this idea of them being dirty because of their color, but actually they're not. I mean, if they were dirty and diseased birds, they wouldn't be able to survive.
Well, what about their droppings? Do they destroy outdoor sculptures or picnic tables?
Well,
it's very annoying if you have a car, isn't it?
With birds, the urine is mixed in with the feces. So, I mean, there's some acidity to it. But if they're not fed people food, then if they're just fed, which makes like a cement-like dropping eventually, if they're just fed seeds, then which is their natural food, then they're doing fine. I mean, think of this. Pigeons are only as dirty or as misfed or overfed as our cities are dirty.
Let's take another call. Tony from Manhattan, how you're on the air.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. How long do pigeons live?
Okay, and what's the other question?
And where do they die? I've never seen a pigeon corpse. I mean, the only dead pigeon I've seen is maybe a pigeon that got hit by a car or something.
Or a stool pigeon who got in trouble with his friends. Now, why are they called stool pigeons?
It's just it's a good question. I was looking into that. I couldn't find anything. I don't know about you, Courtney. How about yours?
Yeah, actually, I don't know about that either.
Now, forget the stool pigeon. How long do they live?
Related words like that. You know, in captivity, they can live, you know, if they're pets, they can live for, I think, over 20 years, some of them. It's just,
wow.
But in the wild, in the cities, they probably live much shorter lives.
It's just a couple of years in the city. And, you know, most animals go off to die. It's just what they do. You know, you don't see a lot of humans die either. They usually die at home or in a hospital, you know, indoors, unless they're in a car wreck. So animals do the same thing. They just kind of go off to die. So you just don't see it.
Now, what about homing? You said that they could be trained to home, but there must be some kind of a genetic reason that they even have that ability.
It's, you know, it's amazing. In this day and age, you think we'd understand this, like, you know, no problem at all, but we still don't. But for the most part, it seems to have to do with the Earth's magnetic force. And they seem to able to track this almost as if they have, like, little bits of magnet. I think it's almost like magnet shavings. That's kind of how I would describe it, literally in their heads. And also incredible vision. They can see the curvature of the Earth, and they also have an unusual sense of smell. So, I mean, these birds can routinely fly 500-mile races at 60 miles an hour, coming from a place they've never been before, and not stop for food, water, or rest, and make it home that evening. And by comparison, you know, a great racehorse, you know, at the Derbies, maybe going 35, 40 miles an hour on a closed racetrack for about a mile and a quarter.
Well, that's why we have pigeons serving, carrying messages at the Battle of Waterloo, World War I, World War II. Courtney, did they still carry messages, or has the internet replaced them?
We don't use them quite the same way we did back in World War I and World War II, where we had, pigeon corps, you know, in the military. We had, you know, trained pigeons that were part of the military. But they are used. I think, you know, I've seen reports in the Middle East, you know, that they're still used in some cases. I don't know, Andrew, do you have any,
they're used,
more modern examples?
Well, it's hard to beat low tech. You know, it's when the NSA is listening in on you from satellites and deep, you know, in outer space. You know, the surgeons use pigeons. I mean, they're undetectable. They're extraordinarily reliable. They're about 99% reliable, and you don't need electricity. You just need some pigeon feed.
Now, what about racing pigeons, Courtney? Are they also bred to do that?
Yeah, so you're talking about, like, the homing pigeons that do these races.
Yes.
They're specially bred in some ways. They're kind of the athletes of birds. They're bred to be bigger and faster and stronger, but they're also normal pigeons in a way, but they've been trained by their breeders to be able to, you know, consistently return home even through all these even if they're taken away for hundreds of miles. So and there's actually, there's also lots of other kinds of pigeon breeds as well, just not just the homing pigeons, but there's lots of what they call fancy pigeons that, are in all different shapes and sizes. I mean, if you think of, you know, a Doberman or a Chihuahua, there's a similar thing in the pigeon world where there's, you know, big pigeons, small pigeons, pigeons of different colors, pigeons with huge, you know, tall pigeons, pigeons with big turkey tails. I mean, just... it's amazing.
In fact,
so it's amazing what people have done to pigeons.
Roger from Warwick says, we took in a wounded racing homer in spring. We tracked down the owner, who was indifferent to retrieving his broken bird. We rehabilitated the pigeon, and we have become quite attached to it. After 5 months, can we assume that the bird will imprint on our house as its home? Or if we let it out for free flight, will it forever fly back to its original coop?
Tricky. I don't know what to say. I would probably keep it indoors.
It might fly back. I mean, I've heard of people, I've talked with breeders who, if they buy a bird from another breeder, they call it a captive bird that they have to keep inside because there's always a risk that it's going to fly back to the original owner.
Fred in Queens.
Yeah, it is a bit of a risk.
And the original owner doesn't really want it. You know, I don't care what they say, and I hate to say this, but they really don't want it because it's basically a defective bird to them.
Uh-huh.
Because it couldn't find its way home, so you're not going to make any money on it.
Why do pigeons, Fred in Queens asks, move their heads back and forth when they walk? Other birds that size don't seem to do that.
From what I could tell, the bobbing.
Courtney. Oh yeah, I think there's at least I've heard that it's sort of a, it's for their visual field, like to sort of stabilize it. Yeah, it's a kind of a funny movement, that forward movement. But that's what the only theory I've heard is about kind of stabilizing the visual field as they're moving.
If you look at it too, the way they are, they kind of waddle because they're basically, they have a center of gravity that's more vertical than most animals, is horizontal. And so it may help stabilize it. But, you know, this is one of those things that really no one knows. It's hard to believe, but...
Are the pigeons that we see on some menus the same as the ones that we see in the park?
No.
What about the things that are squab or what are sometimes called pigeon?
Those are bred at special facilities for the most part, or caught in the wild. But generally, they're not going to be city birds. If they are, then I don't know what to say. But they're generally bred just like chickens.
Yeah, but they are the same species of birds. But they would become, hopefully, they'd hopefully have been bred at a farm, and would be, bought up, but not caught off the street as a street pigeon. But they are the same species. They've just been bred to be a little bigger and more meaty.
It wouldn't be tender otherwise, too, because, those muscles would have been active. So, I mean, basically, squab is the milk-fed veal of the sky.
We go now to John from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. In terms of your earlier caller, I know that one day I was walking past the Museum of Natural History, and I saw a red-tailed hawk feasting on a pigeon he had caught. And I understand that the people who were living on Fifth Avenue had a number of carcasses at their doorsteps because the red-tailed hawks that were living on their building were using them as their meal ticket. But the question I had was, walking around the park, I noticed a number of pigeons that seemed to have a deformed single foot, almost like a claw foot, cramped up. Is that a particular genetic defect that's specific to pigeons, or does it happen in a lot of bird species?
Okay, that has to do with the fact that they get caught on human things like string and that sort of thing, for the most part, plastic, containers or whatever. They generally get stuck on things.
Now, just one more question, Courtney. A study in 2011 revealed that pigeons can discriminate against different amounts of number-like objects, order pairs, and learn abstract mathematical rules. Is that typical, or are pigeons smarter than a lot of birds?
Well, we talked about that a little bit. I think one thing is that pigeons are used a lot in the laboratory, partly because they were they're just such easy birds to work with. They're so social and docile, and because they've been domesticated. So a lot of what we know about these things, we know from studying pigeons, because you can bring them into a laboratory. You don't have to go out in the wild necessarily. But I think they're actually kind of a good model for how other birds' brains probably work. And so I think in that way they're sort of, they're sort of paving the way in terms of research on bird brains. It's pretty amazing that they can remember hundreds of different images, and they're really good at, like, visual discrimination tasks. They're, basically their whole lives are about trying to find little bits of seed on the ground, and so they're very good at spotting things and hunting them down.
Well, if we assume that birds are the descendants of dinosaurs, I wonder what kind of a dinosaur pigeons descended from.
A friendly one.
A social friendly dinosaur. But
herbivores or omnivores?
They're vegetarian. I mean, they don't eat meat. Pigeons, they eat seeds. But a very gentle dinosaur. I mean, these are a horribly discriminated against animal. And I'm not a proselytizer of pigeons. I'm just a journalist. But they are extraordinarily gentle creatures and should be treated as such.
Okay, we'll try to do that in the future. Thank you both so much for being on our show today on this Please Explain Look at Pigeons. Andrew Bleckman, managing editor of Orion Magazine. His book, Pigeons, The Fascinating Saga of the World's Most Revered and Reviled Bird, published by Grove Press. And Courtney Humphreys, whose book is Superdove, How the Pigeon Took Manhattan and the World, is published by the Smithsonian. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much. It's so nice to meet you, Courtney.